If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Madrugada já rompeu. Você vai me abandonar. Eu sinto que o perdão você não mereceu. Eu quis a ilusão. Agora do sou eu.
That is a fantastic new album that just crossed my desk. Getz Gilberto, 1976. Stan Getz and Yao Gilberto. We're going to play it all this hour. While I talk to my friend Marcus Seki, for those of you who still get the New York Times and still pick up the New York Times book review section, you would have noticed a couple weeks ago a fantastic full-page ad with Marcus's name all over it. Marcus Seki reinvents the thriller the way Christopher Nolan reinvented the superhero genre. And then from our mutual friend, Gillian Flynn. Know that name? Gone Girl. Gone Girl. Ring a bell. Ridiculously good. I love this story. He is just out with the final book of the trilogy, the Brilliance Trilogy. I have not read this book yet because I am very sad that it's ending. You know me, Marcus. I've read all of your books.
You have.
Starting in about, when did you first run? 2008?
2007 was the first book,
2007. You grew up wanting to write.
Always. When I was five, I was the kid who wanted to do that.
You grew up in Flint, Michigan.
Yep. I was born in Flint, Michigan, grew up there in the Michigan suburbs.
What, if you want to write at five, what distracted you and got you off that? Maybe you did write and just didn't feel you wanted to make it a profession.
My first published story, I think I was six. It was a...
Published in where?
Yeah. It was a rousing yarn about the Tooth Fairy. It was published in the local paper for reasons past understanding. it was quite a gap between that and my next publication.
Yeah. I mean, did you write in high school and college?
I did. I wrote in high school. I wrote in college. I wrote abysmally in high school. I wrote, you know, horribly in college. It takes a full apprenticeship of reading and time banging out the words.
Yeah.
And it takes life, man. I mean, I graduated college and I thought about writing then and it occurred to me.
So I need a job.
I had nothing to say other than I need a job.
Yeah. And you came here.
I came to Atlanta first.
Atlanta, that's right.
Lived in Atlanta for about 6 or 7 years.
The crazy advertising business.
Worked in advertising. It was perfect training to write about criminals and thieves.
Uh-huh.
And then got to missing the Midwest. So,
how did you have told me? I am sort of Marcus Seki's unofficial biographer because I've written so much about him. But you went into the crime genre initially, and I think was it you who said this? Our mutual pal Sean Chirkover is also very, very talented writing. He told me while I was sitting with you, crime fiction has become the social novel of the times, and I think the genre in which many, many writers believe it might be easiest to make a living. Is that you couldn't have been that calculated, or were you?
There was a certain level of calculation to it, honestly. I mean, this is something that I wanted to do. I wanted to make a living at it, and I knew I've got nothing but admiration for people who get up 3 hours early and bang out their work on their novel and then go get a job. I just knew I wouldn't.
Like Scott Turow.
I mean, it's
books on the train.
It's incredible. People who can do that, I truly admire it. But the way my brain works, I sort of need to be all or nothing.
When did you make the leap, so to speak? When did you say to yourself, okay, or did you say, I can't do advertising anymore. I've saved up a little money. I'm going to try my hand at a novel.
I said exactly that, actually. It was about 2005. I was working in a small ad firm, and I was just done.
Miserable.
I was just burned out on the whole business. And decided, sat down with my wife, and she said, you know, you've always had this dream, this thing that you've wanted to do. Maybe now's the time. We didn't have kids at the time and had a little money saved. So I went in the next morning to resign, to quit my job. And before I could open my mouth to speak, I was laid off.
Wow.
Kid you not.
How serendipitous.
It was one of those moments when the universe gives you a little kick in the pants.
Yeah.
So it was great. I spent about a year or so writing short stories and taking classes and doing freelance work to cover some bills. And then I started my first novel, The Blade Itself, which...
How intimidating was that? How hard was it to say to yourself, okay, I wrote a story and it was published when I was 6 years old, and now I'm going to write... I'm trying to remember the very... It's not The Blade Itself.
The Blade Itself.
I have read all of your books,
I know.
I have not read the third of this trilogy simply because I don't want the whole the Brilliance trilogy to end.
Oh, thank
but
you,
The
Father.
Blade Itself was a... All your books are fabulous books. Many of them have been nibbled at for movies as well. How tough was it to write that first one?
It was tough. What's hardest about the first novel, this sounds so trite, but it's that you've never done it before.
Yeah, right.
You know, so every day is undiscovered country. The first time you get to page 200, that's the longest number of pages you've ever put together. And by the end of that day, you're 4 or 5 pages further along. So what I just really tried to do was recognize how lucky I was to have the chance to do this.
Did you set a time frame for this? Did you say, I'm going to sit down, try to write this book, and I'm going to spend a year and a half, and if it doesn't get published, I'm going to have to go get another real job?
Yeah, well, the time frame was very closely tied to my bank account, Rick.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't that I'd picked a date on the calendar. It was that there just wasn't time to mess around, you know? I had to do it, and that was very... very useful to just go in and frankly, I felt lucky. I mean, when it's going well, this is the best job in the world. You're creating purely.
I agree, but when your wife, Gigi, would come home and say, how was your day, honey? What would you say? I did 8 pages.
Yeah.
I did. I'm stuck here. You know what I mean?
I do. She learned real quickly whether that question needed to be asked or not, because when it was a lousy day, and you know this also just as a writer, it just radiates. You can feel it through the walls.
Yeah.
But that's frankly very useful. You have to take those days where you didn't do well and use them to lash yourself to do better the next day.
Give me the level of fun compared to the advertising business that you were having writing that first book, The Blade Itself, set in Chicago.
I would say it was still a lot more fun. I mean, I was creating, I was chasing a dream, and any time you're chasing a dream, you're kind of foolish not to recognize how lucky you are.
Marcus Sakiu's latest book is titled Written in Fire. It's the third book of the Brilliance trilogy. You can go to, if you don't have an old copy of the New York Times Book Review around, you can go to Marcus Sakiu, SAKEY.com or Amazon.com/brilliance. He's going to be here for the whole hour, and I'm happy about that.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho, o resto de toco um pouco sozinho. Caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol, é a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol. É peroba do campo, nó da madeira, caingá, candeia, o matista pereira. É madeira de vento, tombo da ribanceira.
That is, that's not English. I hope you know that. That's Yao Gilberto singing along with Stan Getz. The CD is Getz Gilberto, 1976. I'm with Marcus Sakiu this entire hour, and we were talking about how he initially became a writer and what it was like to write The Blade Itself. What was it like to sell The Blade Itself?
Oh, man, that was good. You know, honestly, the high point of the whole process was finishing the book, being able to type the end for the very first time. I mean, I jumped around. I bounced off the walls like a pinball. And then I had put a lot of thought into selling it. I'm a student of the craft, come from advertising.
Sure.
This was something that there was some calculation behind it. But then the actual process was very different and very exciting. I sent it out looking for representation. I got about 40 rejections, and then one agent who read it and said, I have to have this. You know, he asked for it on a Thursday, I signed with him on a Monday, and went out, and he was able to sell the book at auction. Had a couple of different publishers bidding on it, and it was the most exceptional, pure feeling more than anything, because I realized I was going to get to do this again.
Again.
At least once. We sold a two-book deal, so I knew I had at least one more.
Oh, that's great, Marcus. That's great. Did you have the next book in your head, though?
I did. I had the next book in my head and maybe the first two or three chapters done. I was of the...
Confidence.
Fear, Rick, fear.
Yeah.
If the first one didn't sell, I figured I might possibly have time to write a second before the funds ran out. So I kept moving.
Your first 5 books before the Brilliance trilogy, 6 books, all are sort of Chicago-centric.
Yes,
more or
all,
less.
More or less, they're all standalones. They're all sort of crime genre, crime thriller novels. No whiff of science fiction or anything in them, but mostly set in Chicago or influenced by Chicago.
Talk to me about Chicago influencing your career. I mean, we have talked about the differences for a novelist between Chicago and New York and Los Angeles and, I suppose, Flint, Michigan.
Better water.
This is not a one-note town.
And
I think that's what really appeals to you and Sean Cherkover.
Yeah, absolutely. Chicago was really kind of an incredible both canvas and muse if you're writing in this genre. And I think part of that is that it's, to me, a quintessentially American city where so many other cities have such a cleanly defined identity. You know, New York is finance and fashion, and it looks east. And Los Angeles is Hollywood and the movie business, and looks west. Chicago really feels like America to me. It's a little of this and a little of that, and the winters are cold, and it just makes for more interesting people.
When was it? I can't remember when you told me. It was not after The Blade itself was published. But after one of the books, it may have been Good People. You can go to Marcus's website, marcussakey.com, and find all of his books, all of which I highly recommend. Good People is an especially interesting one for you young yuppie people out there who live like sort of in Lincoln Park, and you're going to get rich and you find this money. And that did become a movie.
It did, which is a really surreal experience. The story of Good People is, just as you said, it's a young couple that's having some problems in their marriage that discover a lot of money and decide to use it to...
And it's someone else's money.
And a lot of their problems stem from their inability to have a child, and so they're going to use the money for that purpose. I wanted to explore the notion of doing something wrong in the service of something good and how far you can go with that. But it was... That was, of my 8 books, that was actually the one that probably came together the cleanest. I knew essentially what it was. The pieces just snapped together. It was the fastest one I wrote. I've had tremendous luck with Hollywood. They've pretty much all been optioned at one point.
That's great.
That one was actually made.
Yeah, that's a difference. So, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of books get optioned. It must be 500 to 1.
Yes.
Books that get optioned. That's just a wild guess.
I don't know what the numbers are. The thing is, every time you do it, it's another spin of the roulette wheel, and it's a big wheel.
Oh, yeah.
So you learn not to get too excited.
The first time you get totally excited, like with Everybody Pays, Maury Posey and I were insane. Harold Ramis bought the rights, for God's sake, and we're like, oh my God, we're going to be rich.
It's all done. It's
settled.
We're
going to be famous.
You're
planning
what you're going to wear on the red carpet.
All these different planets have to align for this movie to ever, ever get made. When you decided, Marcus Sakey, and I'm not sure you have abandoned the crime genre, but when you decided on a trilogy that was going to be called Brilliance, how did that happen?
The specifics of it happened when I was camping and rock climbing with another author friend of mine, a guy named Blake Crouch, who's a tremendous author. He wrote the Pines series that Wayward Pines television show. But he and I are good friends, and we were out rock climbing and camping, and both starting to talk about what might come next for us.
You weren't in Utah, were you?
No, we were in Colorado.
Okay, because that's one of the settings. There's a strange place in Utah in the Brilliance trilogy.
And I had this notion. My wife got her master's degree at Erickson here in child development, and I was fascinated by the autistic spectrum.
Yeah.
And so we talk about that a lot. And somewhere in there, it had triggered my novelistic brain to say, what if you took those same odds, you know, 1 in 100 or so? But what it was in my world was these are people that are born essentially savants.
Gifted.
But without any of the negative connotations that a savant generally has. They're not superheroes. There's no flying. There's no capes. They just see things we can't, like patterns in the stock market.
The stock market, yeah. That's one of the most interesting characters in this.
You know, and so you take those people, and then the notion is there have always been geniuses and savants throughout history.
Sure.
But they're scattered.
Yeah.
If it's commonplace, if 1 in 100 are truly objectively better, what happens to the other 99 of us?
It's a brilliant idea. We will explore the Brilliance trilogy. The latest book is written in fire. And I will have Marcus Sakey explain how one who has not come to these books, I think they could all stand alone. I can't wait to read the last one because I hate
Thank you.
Well, I can wait because I don't want this whole thing to end. We'll be back. We'll get some commercials. We'll get some news. And then Marcus and I will continue on.
Já conheço os passos dessa estrada, sei que não vai dar em nada. Seu segredo sei de cor. Já conheço as pedras do caminho e sei também que ali sozinho eu vou ficar tanto pior. O que é que eu posso contra o encanto desse?
What do you think of that singer? Yao Gilberto. His wife was Astrid Gilberto of Girl from Ipanema fame. And playing with him is Stan Getz. So the album, CD, is called Getz Gilberto 76. And really, really worth having. Everything is beautiful. It'll put you in the mood for kind of springtime. Okay, Marcus Sakey is here for the rest of this hour. We've talked about how he started in this precarious business of being a novelist. We talked about how he and a buddy were out camping and his wife had gone to Erickson and he was interested in autism and that's why he decided, well, I think I'll write a trilogy called Brilliance. The first book in that trilogy was Brilliance, the second was A Better World, and the third, which has just recently been published a few weeks ago in January, the occasion being marked by a full-page, very cool ad in the New York Times book review section. It is not, I don't call it futuristic. I call it kind of an alternative universe. Is that, it's not really science fiction.
It's not science fiction. No. Yeah. I mean, it's, to me, it's an alternate present, you know, it's a speculative thriller. Anyone who reads the book will recognize our world.
It's, oh, no question.
It is our world. With this one change, that in 1980, for reasons that no one knows, at least at the beginning of the books, 1% of the people started being born with these gifts, these extraordinary gifts, to see patterns in the stock market or know with absolute certainty if someone is lying or be able to
sort of hide within a crowd.
Exactly. And all of it things that, in theory, the human mind can do. I wanted to keep it grounded. I wasn't interested in anyone being able to shoot lightning bolts from their eyes.
Thank God. Thank God.
I might there's said, plenty of that out there.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things about the books, Marcus, and I freely admit that I'm sitting on this last one because I really don't want this want this trilogy to end, but I'm going to have to get to it shortly, is there's a lot of other things going on here. This is a family story. There's a love story. There's a lot of, one of the things that distinguishes this is there is some really pointed and interesting social commentary.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the point. That's the juice in writing something like this. My goal always as a writer is entertainment for smart people. You know, I want to make people miss their train stop or decide to stay up a little bit too late because they just have to read that next chapter. And then hopefully have some ideas that linger, that they just kind of kick around. The books that move me most do that. I get caught up in the story, but then later I realize the author made me think about things.
I don't think I've ever asked you this. What authors have influenced you?
Oh, man, that's a long...
As a child, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a preposterously long list. I mean, I think... I started out when I was young reading fantasy and science fiction, mm-hmm. as a lot of people do, and... I don't really think of brilliance as science fiction, but it certainly exists. It's a neighbor.
Yeah.
So an author that there's really sort of no denying as the bridge between science fiction and more literary fiction is Kurt Vonnegut. You know, you just, I call him the gateway writer. You think you're reading, especially if you're a sci-fi kid as I was, you think you're reading sci-fi and then you come to realize...
Oh, no.
No. Yeah. It's something totally different.
The Silence of Titan is about something completely different.
Indeed. Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, me too. Me too. In setting out to write, is it a commercial notion that drives a trilogy? I'm trying to figure out.
There are commercial...
Instead of publishing an 800-page book.
That partly, certainly. There are commercial reasons to do a trilogy, but that isn't why I wanted to do a trilogy.
Yeah.
For me, this idea, the more I started to explore it, the more I realized I didn't want to just bang out one scenario in this. I wanted to explore that whole world. I wanted to tell an epic story. So all three books form one story. In book time, they take place in less than a year.
Yeah.
You know, but it allows me to take what's 12 or 1400 pages of story and explore it through my primary characters, but also through political angles, through journalistic angles, through media and entertainment angles.
No question.
You know,
no
and just
question.
Really kind of paint it as a world.
One of the interesting things about, I thought the first two books, and again, will this week read Written in Fire, the final
I hope
book three of the Brilliance trilogy. Well, the first two sort of in their way stand alone for me. I mean, I thought to myself, wait a minute. Had I read the second book, I would not necessarily have needed reference points. I mean, that's a tough thing to do, I think.
This is my first time writing in a series.
Yeah.
I wrote five standalones and then jumped into a tightly knit trilogy. And that part's a challenge. It really is. And then more than anything, it's the balance between keeping people informed, people who have never read it, all the way to people who read and loved the last book, but maybe read it a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And giving everyone within that spectrum some cues. At the same time, that's not what I'm there for, man.
Right.
That's not what you're there for.
Exactly. Was that tough?
It is tough.
How would you do it? I mean, maybe you have a big chalkboard or blackboard in your house where you're like, wait, I've got to remind people who this person is, or I've got to make a reference to this event from the first book.
There's some of that. No big chalkboard, but a very long run-on document of... thoughts and ideas that, and hey, remember to do this kind of thing. The second book was the hardest for me on that front, on bringing people back in. Because by the third book, there was part of me that felt like if you start with the third book of a trilogy, I think we've made a social contract together.
Sure.
You chose to start with book three of a trilogy. I don't have to walk you through the first two.
Right.
I think you actually could. I do think all three stand alone.
Yeah, no, there's
much
no question.
Richer if you read them all together.
The first two, certainly, and I'm sure I'll think the same thing about this one. You did this very fast, relatively fast.
I guess it's because this is the first time I've written a series. It felt like I lived with it for a long time and was 4.5 years. But considering that's three books and, you know, 1,200 pages, I guess I did.
Yeah. What is, let's take a quick break and we'll finish off with Marcus Seki. You can go to Amazon.com/brilliance and get his book in a variety of different ways, I assume.
Indeed.
Brilliant, the Chicago Sun-Times. Lee Child, who's a very good writer, says, your press kit, Marcus, is really pretty overwhelming. It's like every author who has ever written a good book is quoted as saying this. You're determined to stay here, are you not?
I am. I'm good. Delighted.
Good. We'll be right back. Okay, that's your hour with Yao Gilberto and Stan Getz. I'm going to play some John Prine in the second hour. But just a few minutes with Marcus Seki left. Marcus is the author of many, many fine books. You can go to Marcus Seki, SAKEY.com to read all of these lavish praise for him beyond what I've, my modest attempts at praise. But all of his books before the Brilliant series are fabulous, many of them very, very Chicago-centric. But the Brilliant series, book three, Written in Fire, is just out. This is quite an accomplishment for you. It's not my place to be proud of you, but a trilogy is a lot to bite off. What are you thinking now?
It's funny. It is a lot, and it's a lot of time spent with these characters.
Oh, yeah.
And there's as I neared the end of the third book, I was really cognizant of that, the kind of bittersweet nature of I'm almost done, and that's very exciting. And then at the same time, I'm not going to get to write these guys anymore.
That's a long time to live with the same characters.
It is.
And Nick, your main protagonist, is a really, I find, charismatic character. He's flawed.
Thank you.
He's flawed, but he's charismatic.
Yeah, I'm not all that interested in wish fulfillment in characters. I want characters that feel real. And he was, I don't know, you'll hear authors sometimes discuss how they hear their characters talking to them. And if you hear your characters talking to you, you should adjust your dosage.
Schizophrenic.
There's something wrong.
Yeah.
But there is it's almost like a really nice car, you know, a car you just enjoy driving. You can get there in anything, but if you happen to be,
driving
this, it's just, it makes
and
the
also
joyous.
The view, and also the view is something that appeals to you, too.
Yes.
You know, the road is a huge part of it. Are you even thinking about it? You know, I know you were something, I mean, you are not happy when you're writing if you haven't done 5,000 words.
I know that. I am actually. I'm at work on my next book. It is, of course, not this. The Brilliance trilogy is complete. It's another sort of big idea novel, though, another speculative thriller. And for me, part of the fun is each time trying something new and something bigger.
That's great.
This one, I can measure how successful a book has the potential to be to me, not commercially, but how much it will hit my metric by how much I'm hating myself during the process and how much I'm banging my head against the wall. And by that measurement, this one's going to be a classic.
Now, your daughter is 4 years old. When Fiona, who's 11, hasn't started reading the Kogan. I guess she could read the Billy Goat book, but some of the others would be tough. What kind of joy do you think that's going to be for you? And how old will she have to be to read? Well, to start with the first one, The Blade Itself.
Wow. Well, it's going to give me immense joy if she wants to read it. It's not something I'll force.
Oh, sure, sure.
I've actually wondered that sort of from the other perspective to imagine what it would be like from her point of view, because there was a time when I journaled or, you know, kept a notebook of my thoughts. Then I started writing books, and now they are my journals and my notebooks. I can look back on them and see where I was in my life. You'll see all kind from random details to major themes, they're all in the books. And it's very curious to me to imagine if she'll see that, if she'll be wondering what her dad was thinking or wrestling with when he wrote Good People or Brilliance.
Yeah.
I don't know. She may not be interested at all. Right now we're at the Octonauts Team Umizoomi level of
right,
reading.
Right, right, right. She's a way off from the Brilliance trilogy. Marcus, I can't wait to finish. In many ways, I'm conflicted about finishing the final book in the trilogy. It's been sitting on my desk for like...
Man, that is
two weeks.
The highest praise.
It should be. You should take it as high praise. What about, before I let you go, what about movie nibbles on this? Because, I mean, you'd need a pretty big budget, to my mind, because there's a lot going on in these. Movie nibbles on this one?
Yeah, well, this, I mean, you want to talk about the roulette wheel that is Hollywood.
Yeah.
This actually sold in a six-studio auction. Well before Brilliance came out, maybe 6 months before Brilliance came out, it sold to Legendary Pictures, who did Inception and the Batman series. They got David Koepp to write the script. He's probably the biggest screenwriter working today. Spider-Man, Jurassic Park, Panic Room. They signed Will Smith to play Nick Cooper, which was kind of a huge thing.
That's a huge thing.
Really big gets all across the board. Filming was supposed to start in 4 weeks, and everything fell apart.
Of course.
Everything
Will
fell
Smith
apart.
Got a cold. Basically. And that's the way it works, ladies and gentlemen. It's like Will Smith got a cold. Some other deal came up. It pulled someone else off this thing. Marcus Seki, it is a pleasure, an ongoing pleasure to know you and to read you.
You are too kind, Rick. Thanks so much for having me.